By serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distress. Yasevaya bhagavata kutastasya madadvisha rati raso babetivra padayor vyasanardanaho. Okay. So, first we put a little perspective here, because we don't want to, you know, not be able to see the forest from the trees. So this verse is part of this whole chapter, and Vidura's question is about God and the jiva. You know, what is their relationship of God and the jiva to the material world? Of course, Maitreya has been describing the creation of the material world, you know, where it comes from, and I guess kind of getting technical details, you know, sarga, visarga. But then somehow or other, Vidura pulls back this very, very basic question. You know, if God is good, why is there evil? Like that, so on. And then Maitreya answers, and especially he's explaining in a very, very logical sense what is this world. But you have to understand it really from a guru. He's making this point. In this point, in this chapter, like that. And then after everything else, he'll go back to the cosmology and describe the specific, you know, creations from the body and the different elements, these interactions like that, you know, and so on. So one point is that, you know, these are not exactly in any way new ideas, you know. These are things that we've been hearing from the very beginning, you know, about the creation of this material world, how God is transcendental. Mamai Bamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. You know, these are things that we've been hearing from the very, very beginning of our studies, you know, that this material nature is under Krishna's control, Krishna's not under its control, you know, and the Jiva creates his own reactions like that, and so on. But so this is a very important point, because in many ways we're not going to learn something new in the Bhagavad study. What we learn instead is the same thing again and again from different perspectives. You know, like that. Another one is Kirata Hunandra Polinda Polka Asa, yeah, Abira Shamba Kasadayaha. It's right there also in the second canto. Yeah. And first canto? Sukadeva Goswami is, let's see, is Narada. Yes, it's Narada to Vyasa, I think. Yeah. First canto. Maybe second canto. Yeah. But very early on. And so Sukadeva Goswami is, yeah, it's the second canto. It's right before he describes Brahma speaking to Narada Muni. And he makes this point the same way, is that people, even if they're uncivilized people, they are Kiratas or Hunas or you know, Turks or Greeks. Yeah. Yeah. If they take shelter of an advanced devotee like that, they can be delivered from their sinful reactions. Yeah. And many times, of course, it's the same thing here as a discussion of being delivered from sinful reactions as opposed to developing devotional service, you know, by itself, you know, liberation. You know. So, but here is talking about also about actually something going beyond that, about, you know, actual devotional service. Then, of course, the actual details of the different ecstasies and the different comparisons of the different levels of devotional service from, you know, Vaikuntha to Dwarka to Vrindavan, you know. And these are all described in maybe more advanced literature, you know. So it depends on our particular level of development. And so maybe we should be going ahead and studying Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know. Yeah. And then studying these things as kind of a review, but we should be studying and reading more advanced topics than this. Yeah. Okay. Let's go ahead here. The actual purport. Okay. Prabhupada says, the association of a bona fide spiritual master, like the sage Maitreya, can be absolute help in achieving the transcendental attachment for the direct service of the Lord. The Lord is the enemy of the Madhu demon, or in other words, he is the enemy of the suffering of his pure devotee. Okay. So again, this is the point in the beginning. We're trying to get free from material distress, which of course indicates also material attachment, which indicates inability to take up the service of the Absolute. Yeah. So it may be serving Krishna, but it may be very indirectly, it may be in the form of the Paramatma, so many things like that. But the association of a bona fide spiritual master like Sage Maitreya can be of absolute help in achieving transcendental attachment for the direct service of the Lord. So I know myself, this is something I want to do. I want to. Now I'm more like, you know, Narta Nivritti service. Let me go on doing service so I'm free from distress. Narta Nivritti Nishta Ruchi. Okay, then we start to get a taste. The Lord is the enemy of the Madhu demon, or in other words, he is the enemy of the suffering of his pure devotee. Because it talks about service to the Lord, but it gives him a different name. Adhoksaja, Akhiliartma. These are more like Paramatma names, secondary names. But here, Madhudvisha is personal, but it's only in terms of killing off the demon Madhu. So, okay, what's next? The word Rati Rasaha is significant in this verse. Okay. Service to the Lord is rendered in different transcendental mellows, relationships. Neutral, active, friendly, parental, and conjugal. Neutral, active, friendly, parental, and conjugal. A living entity is in the liberated position of transcendental service to the Lord. A living entity in the liberated position of transcendental service to the Lord becomes attracted to one of the above-mentioned mellows. Okay, so before the actual mellows or rasas develop, one is going to be liberated, in transcendental service. Karma bhya parito hare priyataya vyaktim jajur gyaninas gyani vimukta bhakti parama primaika nistastata devyasta pasupala pankajwadastastha biopi saradika kundam chasya munibir kundam yapastaya pilama sulabham kimpunar bhakti bhajam, something like that. Okay, yeah. So Upadeshamrita number 10. Upadeshamrita is a summary of everything. So number 10 is a wonderful summary of these different levels. Karma bhya parito hare. That better than the karmis, you know, karmis are better than vikarmis. Prabhupada discusses in the purport. So what are we? Somebody may realize, actually, I'm a vikarmi. Okay, you know. Anyway, okay, karmi. Following rules and regulations to get his sense gratification, but very determined to get sense gratification. Okay, so I can accept that's my position, yeah. But I'm following the rules and regulations, you know, given by Muhammad, given by Confucius. And there may be some idea of God as a person in the system, or maybe a more impersonal system, like the analectics of Confucius, or the Chandika Rajaniti, or something like that. Yeah. So, but if I do this, these things have the specific potency of inspiring, you know, devotional service. Jamanam bahunam jamanam ante ganavamam prapajante vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurabaha. Then we realize Krishna's everywhere in Vasudev, he's so therefore we should serve him, okay, in that aspect, as Vasudev, you know, all pervasive. Then we become devotees. Then by following the devotional process and actually doing our work, you know, doing our work, Krishna is conquered by the love of one who conquers his senses. Okay, then we conquering our senses, bring them under control, and boy, it's such a big process. One of Prabhupada's disciples had the name Gajahanta, and Gaja means elephant, and Hanta means destroyer. So he told me he asked Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said it meant to conquer the senses. The senses are like so powerful. You know, they want to taste, they want to smell, they want to feel. Energy, agitation. Yeah. But by getting up early, by forcing ourselves to do kirtan, by forcing ourselves to cook for Krishna, honor prasad, you know, by reading books, associating with devotees, doing sankirtan, Then, you know, we start to advance. And that, then it says next that amongst all these devotees who are, amongst all the gyanis, one is actually liberated by his intelligence, by his wisdom. He takes to devotional service, and devotional service actually will bring us to the point of pure devotional service. So a neophyte, he may be engaged in worshiping the deity, he may be engaged in bowing down to Mecca, he may be engaged in, you know, the mantras for the worship of Sriman Narayan, you know. But there's no rasa, no ecstasy, yeah. So a living entity in the liberated position of transcendental service to the Lord becomes attracted to one of the above mentioned metals. Brahma-bhuta, prasanatma, naso-chati, nakangshati, sama-sarvesha-bhuteshu, ma-bhakti-labhite-param. So we become devotees, somehow or other we got a taste, brahmandi-brahmati-kon, we're following it, whatever. In the beginning, it was this kind of strange thing we're doing, but then it gets to actually become liberated. You know? And then we can become attracted to transcendental mellows. You know? Right now, our attraction is this relief from distress in various ways. Relief from material mellows, you know. But attraction to spiritual mellows is a positive, intense ecstasy. Tivrena. And, Prabhupada says, when one is engaged in transcendental loving service of the Lord, one's service attachment in the material world is automatically vanquished. That's nice, huh? Everybody has their service attachment. I am attached to serving Krishna by writing books, you know. About Gone with the Wind or something like that. What else we got? You know, Harry Potter, you know. Yeah. And somebody else is attached to mowing cutting grass, you know. Somebody else is attached to defeating the evil enemy, you know. Somebody else is attached, you know, to giving milk to babies. Okay. So everybody has their service attachment. And they feel it's very important, you know, that they do their service, you know, so on. Yeah. This is what I do. And when one is engaged in transcendental loving service to the Lord, one's service attachment in the material world is automatically vanquished. So until we come to bhava, you know, we're not really going to give up our attachment to the material world. Oh my goodness. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.59, rasa varjanam rasopi asya param dvistvam nivartate. Yeah. By experiencing a higher taste, one gives up the lower taste. Yeah. Okay, and that's Prabhupada's purport, you know. These last few verses, let me go ahead here and escape, okay. And see if I can do this here. I'm making another PowerPoint show we're working on here, okay. What do we got here? What have I got? Well, I have here conundrum, okay. A conundrum is an especially confusing thing. I wanted to load up the Bhaktivinoda database offline. There we go. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7. I had it twice. Okay, Krishna. Okay, so there it is. Yeah. So after hearing this description of how we're attached to the material world, and how when Krishna's position, in 3.7.15, Vidura says, "O powerful sage, my Lord, all my doubts about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities have now been removed by your convincing words. My mind is now perfectly entering into them. O learned sage, your explanations are very good, as they should be. Disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy. Both the lowest of fools and he who is transcendental to all intelligence enjoy happiness, whereas persons between them suffer the material pangs." Yeah. So it always reminds me of a very strong experience I had. When I was in the University of California, I joined a fraternity at UC Davis, University of California, Davis. It's the agricultural campus. They have pig barns and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, we had a fraternity. It was Theta Chi. And then maybe like 27 guys living in the fraternity house. And then we got a puppy. He was named Kai. He was like a, what do you call it, a purebred something, but he was a puppy, you know. One of our members was actually a veterinary medical student. You know. So we had him. And of course, you can imagine what it was like being a puppy with 27 young men to play with. Everybody would play ball, and you know, so he was always happy, you know. Then one day I was coming back from the campus. Maybe I mentioned this before, and maybe about three blocks, you know, from my fraternity house, I started hearing the screaming, you know. And as I got closer to it was right downtown. There was screaming you could hear for block after block after block, you know. And I got there, and there was our little puppy, you know, maybe the size of a football, a little longer. And he was just, with every respiration, he was screaming, you know, in pain. You know, and all these people were gathering and stuff. And we were right actually in the business, in the regular business area, right in the center of the town. It wasn't very intense, but somehow or other, he got hit by an automobile. And his you know, blood was coming from his mouth, and he was lying there. And he was in unbelievable pain, you know. Our vet med student came out, here's a little fact. If you want to give artificial respiration to a dog, you just pull up and down on the leg, you know, and that artificially respirates him. You know, but somehow or other, I don't know what happened, something. But he was, you know, he's the lowest fool. He was the lowest fool, and so when things were good, they were good. He was enjoying, you know, no perspective on anything whatsoever else. You know, and on the other hand, when things were bad, they were bad. There was no perspective on any possibility of becoming cured from this, or at least I didn't lose a leg or something else like that. So the lowest fool, when we forget everything, then we were enjoying life in the material world. But some of the mode of passion, they're conscious of the fact that maybe I won't be able to keep this position, maybe that will happen, you know. And so they have a little bit of impetus, you know, to actually, in the human form of life, to actually go ahead and engage in devotional service. And the result, of course, is, you know, mamai bhangsa jivalokeja bhuta sanatana. Mamai bhangsa jivalokeja bhuta sanatana manushastrani indyani. Whatever, okay. That's the last part. And it's manustanu stanukarshati. Any case, one who's engaged, oh yeah, mamcha yobi acharena bhakti yogana sevana sivate sa gunasamatitjaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Okay. Somebody who fully engages in devotional service, and he transcends all these modes, and he comes to the level of Brahman like that. He actually becomes liberated, you know. And not just neutral to everything else, which is the Brahma Buddha stage, but actually then we get positive devotional service, you know. Both the lowest of fools and he who is engaged, he who is transcendental to all intelligence, enjoy happiness, whereas persons between them suffer the material pangs. 18. But my dear sir, I am obliged to you because now I can understand that this material manifestation is without substance, although it appears real. I am confident that by serving your feet, it will be possible for me to give up the false idea. So here he's beginning to describe the process. You know, he sees in general, philosophically, what the situation is. Then the first thing is to accept the lotus feet of an acharya. You know. By serving the feet of the spiritual master, Vidura says, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. And then the next verse, persons whose austerity is meager can hardly obtain the service of the pure devotees, who are progressing on the path back to the kingdom of Godhead, the Vaikunthas. So these are pure devotees who are in progress. You know, what do you call it, sadhana bhaktas or bhava bhaktas, like that. But they're still within the material impasse, you know, maybe even on the level of bhava bhakti. You know. The Vaikunthas. Pure devotees engage 100% in glorifying the Supreme Lord, who is the Lord of the demigods and the controller of all living entities. So again, which Lord? The lover of Rukmini, the lover of the darling of Yashoda? No, you know, Devanath, yeah. Ishvara, Jiveshwar. Yeah. So again, these are a certain level of pure devotee. You know, we're still in the third canto here. 21. After creating the total material energy, the Mahatattva. So now it starts then. You know, it starts describing the again the creation of the material world like that. Yeah. Okay. So pretty much that's our whole perspective on this verse. And Maitreya is giving, Vaidura is asking, you know, very, very basic principles, which myself, I know, oof, I need this. I'm struggling to keep my, I have a pretty good solid morning program. We're online here at Start Meeting every day at 4:30 in the morning, our time. Yeah. And a pretty solid crew of devotees, and it's really useful program and stuff. Yeah. But as the mode of ignorance comes in the evening, I tend to fall apart and, you know, become more interested in maybe like reading the history of something or this or that, you know, and so on, after a hard day's work. Yeah, okay, you know. But then somehow or other, okay, we've got to keep the evening program together too and have a solid evening program, you know. When we have that, you know, of course, our whole, we become liberated. You know, if you maintain a full morning and evening program, follow the four principles strictly, chant 16 rounds, and make sure everybody under your authority does the same thing, you'll have no problems. Navigindamar said Prabhupada told that to him when he was going to take up a difficult management service in Africa. And so I applied it. I heard it at that point. It's a fact, you know. But it's just still a struggle to get things squeezed in there. You know, one thing I do is if about 4:30, if I can just drag my body into the temple room, set up my camp there, then, okay, I got the Association of Devotees are coming in, whatever else, and start hearing and chanting, reading, you know, different stuff like that about Krishna. And then, okay, can stay there all the way through until deities take rest, you know, and then also that I take rest. You know. So in any case, this is the point, that coming to this point of successful Vaidya Bhakti, then we're liberated even from the tinges of passion and ignorance. And then we can actually begin to appreciate the transcendental, positive, real nature, not shadow nature, of spiritual life. So any questions or comments or anything else? We have some few notes about Govardhan Puja also. Like that.
Oh, okay. You want? Let me unmute everybody. I'm sure we would very much. Whoops! Why am I echoing? Anyway, anyone have any questions or comments?
Krishna Kirtan.
I can understand the microphone. Can you please mute?
Okay, so maybe we should go ahead then with our few comments about Govardhan Puja also.
I think that'd be very nice, Maharaj.
Okay. Push F5. There you go. Okay. And, okay. Srila Prabhupada dictating. See, get free audio soundtrack here. Govardhan Puja Ki Jai. Hantaya Madrayar Aha Abalaharidasa Varya Yad Ramakrishna Charina Sparasha Mapramoda Manon Tanoti Sahago Ganayus Tayoriat Paniyasu Yavasa Kanda Kandamulai. This is the verse. It says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Lord Chaitanya visits Vrindavan. He did his parikrama of the 12 forests, however it is, yeah, Dwadashavan, yeah. And when he came to Govardhan, which is actually the beginning, you think you start at something Ghat, whatever it is, a Ghat there with all the different places where Dhruva Maharaj did his austerities, something Ghat, you know. And then you go to Govardhan to see the Haridev temple, which is the beginning, all right there in Mathura. And that's where the parikrama, I think, is supposed to start, you know. So Govardhan is right in the very beginning. And it said when Lord Chaitanya would see Giriraj, he would chant this verse, Hantayim Adira Balaharidasa Varya. And it's a verse from the gopis. And I think maybe the gopis appreciating the sound of Krishna's flute or something, you know. Hantayam Adrir Haribas Adrir Hantayam Adrir Abala Haridasa Varya. One gopi says to another, oh, just see this Govardhan, Hari Dasa Varya. He's the greatest devotee of Hari, like that, you know. His hairs are standing up in ecstasy, which of course means the blades of grass. These are all Giriraj's hairs there, are standing up in ecstasy in the trees and so on. Why? Ramakrishna Charana Sparasha Pramoda. The lotus feet Charana of Radha and of Rama and Krishna, of Ramakrishna, are touching him like that. And so he's just in ecstasy to get that touch. Everybody's very fortunate to get the touch of Rama and Krishna's feet on his body. Yeah. So very nice. You know, Giriraj is getting this. And then what does he do? He's the best devotee because he supplies all kinds of roots and fruits, and the trees give shade. And of course, trees also perspire to produce a very, very nice, you know, pleasant cooling water mist. Fragrances, aromas, extracts, and also all the trees are so nice that there are many, many birds, and the birds are like an orchestra making beautiful sounds like that. And the many very, very nice rivulets or waterfalls cascading down in ponds, you know. So Giriraj is like the Disneyland of the spiritual world. Different Top Gun or Big Bad Wolf rides, you know, like that. Places you can slide down or swing. Maybe you can swing out over the water and just drop right into the water from, you know, from 25 feet. Like that, wham. Yeah. So Giriraj, he's the best devotee because he supplies all these things for who? Goganayos. For all the cows and all the friends of Krishna. Like that. Such a great playground place. And Prabhupada says that even the caves and places like this become very, very confidential meeting places for Radha and Krishna. You know? So there's a whole history, of course, of how Giriraj got to Vrindavan and things like that. But he's eternal. You know, he exists eternally in the spiritual world. And when Krishna comes to the material world, then Giriraj also comes. Go means cow, var means the best, and dhana means charity or wealth. Now, if you go to the old YouTube there, I think you can look up, I have the link right here, but you can look up, like I think, Indra or something, and they have a separate clip of a little Krishna section just about Govardhan. And it's a nice thing, nice little story, the graphics and stuff and so on. It actually makes a pretty nice story like that. Very nice illustration. You know, all these festivals, you know, Govardhan Puja can go on for 5 days. You know, 2 days before the festival, you can get warmed up, 2 days afterwards. And, of course, Govardhan Puja was just one event. You know, Krishna convinced Nanda Maharaj, and there's a whole discussion there of the philosophy he uses. It was a Karma Mimamsa philosophy. He uses that to convince him not to do the sacrifice and worship Govardhan. And then there's a whole description of the Govardhan festival, which is today, most likely. But then after that, then Indra became angry, maybe even like the same day or something. So it's something like 1 week or something, isn't it? 1 week, 10 days, that he throws down, you know, large pieces of ice, like the size of half the size of an automobile or something, falling from 15,000 feet or something, you know. So, and just the whole place, the whole land is inundated, and continuous winds and rain and everything else, you know. So Indra was basically trying to kill the Brijvasis. You know, it's very difficult to think of anything much more offensive than what Indra was doing, you know. Whereas Brahma just very carefully, you know, intoxicated them, put them to sleep and comfortably, and took them very nicely to someplace else for 1 year. Yeah, on the other hand, Indra was trying to kill the Brijvasis. You know? But Indra, when he apologized, Krishna said, oh, no, it's okay. You know, you get carried away sometimes. You got a tough job, like that. But when Brahma apologized, Krishna didn't say anything. So he didn't even know if Krishna had really forgiven him or not. You know, like that. So maybe the difference is that Indra does have this difficult position like that. Okay, oh, I see what happened. My clock is not telling me it's time for the class. My clock hasn't changed from the 1 hour time, thing like that. Okay. Yeah. Brahma is in a more advanced position, you know. So he's therefore a small offense from Brahma is a lot more significant than a bigger offense from Indra, because there's more like disobedience in one than in the other. Indra is an incarnation, a Shakti Vesh avatar, of the lusty nature of Krishna. You know, Narada is Shakti Vesh avatar of knowledge, of bhakti. The Kumaras are Shakti Vesh avatars of knowledge. Prithu is Shakti Vesh avatar of the ability to control and maintain the people. But Indra is Shakti Vesh avatar of Krishna's lusty nature. Good clothes, good drink, good food, you know. What's the word? Very, very enviable mate. Oh, look, he has such a beautiful wife, you know. She's so obliging, you know. Yeah. Sachi Devi. So therefore, it's not too surprising that Indra ends up in always, you know, peculiar situations like that. So here's this whole story on YouTube. And then if we go to the actual 10th canto, you know, of course, Prabhupada's translations and purports finished off in chapter 14. So these are by Gopi Puranadana and Hridayananda Maharaj, who has now been banned from preaching in ISKCON, in Europe. Okay, so we have very, very interesting, challenging, you know, things in our service. 10:25:11. The cows and other animals are shivering from the excessive rain and wind, and all the cowherd men and ladies, pained by the cold, all approached Lord Govinda for shelter. And later it will say that Krishna was standing on the porch. Okay, 10:25:12. Trembling from the distress brought about by the severe rainfall. Trembling from the distress brought about by the severe rainfall, and trying to cover their heads and calves with their own bodies. Mm-hmm. Now, the cows approached the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhaga, Tvannatham Gokulam Prabho, Tratum Arhasi Devanna, Kupita Bhaktavatsalaha. Okay, everybody together. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhaga, Tvannatham Gokulam Prabho, Tratam Arhasi Devanna, Kupita Bhaktavatsalaha. So I guess we could change Gokulam for ISKCON. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhaga, Tvannatham ISKCONam Prabho. Okay, we have our own little village, Prabhupada's ISKCON. The cowherd men and women addressed the Lord, Krishna, Krishna, O most fortunate one, please deliver the cows from the wrath of Indra. O Lord, you are so affectionate to your devotees, please save us also. Like that. So he's from Natam Gokulam Prabhu. He's the master, the Lord and master of Gokula, like that. Yeah. And what are they asking for? They're asking for Krishna to save the cows, not even asking about themselves. You know, such very generous people, such very compassionate people, that their first concern seems to be the cows. At the time of Lord Krishna's birth, Prabhupada says in the purport, Hridayananda Maharaj says in the purport, but from the previous acharyas, at the time of Lord Krishna's birth, Gargamuni had predicted, Anena sarva durgani yuyam anjas tarish yata. Bhagavatam 10:8:16. By his grace, Gargamuni said, you will easily cross beyond all difficulties. Oh, it's very nice. Huh? The residents of Vrindavan were confident that in such a great emergency, Lord Srinarayan would empower Krishna to protect them. They accepted Krishna as everything, and Krishna reciprocated their love. So I like this because it's kind of indicating that the Vrishvasis, they never thought of Krishna as Narayan. Well, maybe he is Narayan. maybe he is a great demigod. Maybe he's a great mystic yogi. Maybe he was this. Maybe he was that. You know, he has some blessing. You know, some fairies are watching after him. You know, so on. So they were thinking, okay, we'll approach Krishna because in Narayan will empower Krishna to take care of us, like that, and so on. So maybe we are developing the same feeling towards Prabhupada, yeah, towards Guru, that in any kind of difficulties in ISKCON, any demons coming in, the Internal Revenue Service, or the government trying to take away our property, or police trying to lock us in jail for doing Sankirtan, you know. Then when it gets bad, you know, we're shivering, put into a cell with no windows, with no clothes and no toilet, you know, for 3 days with just little water and stale bread, you know, okay. Then, but it says we will we will easily cross beyond all difficulties, you know, by taking shelter of Krishna, taking shelter of Prabhupada. Okay. Then 10, 15, 25, Krishna said, because we stopped his sacrifice, Indra caused this unusually fierce, unseasonable rain, together with terrible winds and hail. By my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness, they falsely consider themselves the Lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. Having said this, Lord Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft just as easily as a child holds up a mushroom. And so Krishna was standing on a little bit elevated place. One calf there is taking a little milk. And I guess Nanda Maharaj offering prayers. Yeah. And there's gopis. And Radharani someplace, like that. In the background is Indra, yeah, like that. Yeah. So, iti ukt vaikena hastena kritva govardhanachalam dadhara lilaya vishnuh chatrakam iva balakaha. And it says in the purport, the verse we just reconfirmed, it is confirmed in the Hari Vansha that Krishna picked up the Govardhan mountain with his left hand. Sadhrita sangato megair giri savyena panina. With his left hand, he picked up that mountain which was touching the clouds. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Lord Krishna was preparing to lift Govardhan, a partial expansion of his yogamaya potency named Samhariki temporarily removed the rain from the sky, so that as he ran very swiftly from the porch of his house to the mountain, neither his turban nor other garments became wet. So when I'm reading that, did you imagine it? Did you imagine the picture? Yeah, later on we can mention that. So his turban and garments didn't get wet. Yeah. For us, it takes time to do these slideshows. Like you see, I have a background here of a guy in the rain. I had to find that on the internet. Then you can make the text boxes a certain transparency, and then you get some of the rain coming through. You know, so I have a Shudra tendency. I like to do Shudra work, and I become proud of it, and I insult others, and Krishna removes my pride. Okay, so this is because it's unnatural. It's unnatural for the demigods. The previous verse says to have these things. It's unnatural for devotees in ISKCON to have these qualities. It's unnatural for GBC's secretary to be proud of, you know, becoming an earthly god. Oh, earthly gods, you are assembled here to make decisions in all the matters of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. You know? And of course, I don't know, maybe one of the ladies can talk more about how they fall in Maya. But probably, you know, they could become proud. Okay, now I'm not like those other girls outside. I don't drink or smoke or you know, I'm very chaste. You know, so on, whatever else, and I'm affectionate and so forth and so on. I'm the supreme personality of motherhood. You know? And then, of course, when that bumps against different things, and Krishna goes ahead and like, it says he removes the devotee's pride without humiliating him or embarrassing him. I know Mother Yashoda, Devi Dasi, she's in Vrindavan. She was in Berkeley before she ended up there, many, many years. And she said there's one kind of statement that says the first time Krishna will chastise you for some misbehavior privately, and the second time or the third time he'll make it public like that. That's what you've been doing, the stupid stuff you've been doing. You've been watching Bart Simpson cartoons during Gaura Artik the last 3 weeks. Okay, yeah. So this is a very nice example, Indra getting a little puffed up and then Krishna curing the thing in a very, very nice fashion. And then Govardhan becoming the shelter, you know, the instrument. Okay. So, any final any questions or comments about Govardhan?
I didn't remute anybody, so it's all open. I had actually one question and a couple of comments, but I'll wait. Anyone else?
Maharaj, I was kind of startled by what you said about Krishna's lusty nature. That kind of surprised me. I didn't think that God had that kind of nature.
Well, he has a material nature. Yeah, the whole material world is one of his natures, like that and so on. I read it someplace. You know, we could maybe do like a search, you know, on the Veda base like that and so on. But it's just that everything is Krishna. You know, Mayatatam idam sarvam jagadavyakta murtena matstani sarabhu bhutani nachaham teshvasitaha. But some of this is his bina prakritira ashtada. It's his separated nature. Just like again, kubja. You know, Krishna goes and he engages in dalliances with kubja, and it explains that she is that potency. She's I forgot what it is, bhushakti. You know, and so somebody may make this promise: "Oh Krishna, I will never take anything but prasadam. I promise you this," and he's very strict about it, even though there may be temptations with friends or something like that, you know. But he wants good prasadam, like that. Krishna, I will never take anything but prasadam, but I do ask that whatever prasad I have be of good quality, like that, and gratify my lust, you know. So all these different shaktis are there, but specifically Indra as a shakti vesh avatar of Krishna's lusty nature, you know, okay, that's, you know, maybe some in my notes, and try to build an index of these things, but that's all I remember. You know, reading it someplace. Yeah, it's okay.
I guess I, like I say, it kind of surprises me. I just thought that, you know, God is pure and He's all good, and then to hear suddenly that He has a lusty nature.
But that's exactly the content of the verses for the last couple weeks, right? So this would be one of his external qualities, you might say, like that and so on. A perversion of his, because he's the enjoyer, yeah. So the perverted reflection of his activity as a supreme enjoyer, like that. The highest manifestation of it is Indra. Yeah.
Yeah. Hi Krishna.
Yes.
Can I say something?
Please say a lot of things.
I was thinking that, you know, due to from Krishna's question, that Krishna's lustiness is not mundane, it's not like ours at all, but he's lusty for the pure loving devotion of his devotees. You know, that's what he's interested in, and it's just not mundane like ours.
Yeah.
I guess I need a better explanation of the word lust.
Yes.
Yeah, ours is mundane, like we want our own to satisfy our own desires, but Krishna actually wants to satisfy the desires of his pure devotees. And how can we understand this transcendental platform? This is beyond us.
You get, for example, though, the Kumaras. Now the Kumaras are not pure devotees, and they're an incarnation of Krishna's knowledge potency, right? Yeah. So again, Krishna's knowledge potency, like Mataji is saying, is not an ordinary thing. But when it comes in the material world, okay, then it becomes the Kumaras who are, in the beginning, they're impersonalists. So their knowledge is unlimited. They can make any kind of machine, they can make any kind of mystic power, everything else like that, and so on. Okay, let's look up Indra. Avatar.
Also, the gopis' lustiness for Krishna, I think I read that Chaitanya Charitamrita is that they're lusty to satisfy Lord Krishna.
Yeah, yeah. When Radharani's at
what they're craving.
When Lord Chaitanya's at the Ratha Yatra in the mood of Radharani, it's a very nice explanation about that. You know, they have a conjugal intensity to satisfy Krishna. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't find it right away. Anyway, so hopefully Krishna will reveal this to us. Srimad Bhagavatam, Indra. Yeah. Look real quick here, I see if Krishna in the fourth order. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I would say again the same thing, it's just with the Manus, you know, there's Krishna's knowledge potency, but it becomes what's the word? In the material world, it becomes manifested with his ego involved. So the same way Krishna has this desire to enjoy Bhoktaram Yagatapasyam, he's the supreme enjoyer. In the Krishna book, it's talking the same thing, that Krishna has this desire for sense gratification. But the thing is that he's the root of all existence, so he knows that the more that his senses are gratified, that's the best way for everybody else to get energy, happiness, intelligence, and purification like that, and so on. You know? But when we try and take that up, when we want to become Indra and enjoy all this opulence, prestige, defeating our enemies, you know, then it becomes perverted, like that, and so on. Yeah. And that's what makes the material world go on. If there's nobody striving to become Indra in the material world, then the whole material world is not going to go on like that. You know? Yeah. Okay. So anybody else? Any other points or questions?
Yes. I had two questions, two comments. Okay. You went over this a little bit too fast for me. So Govardhana. So go is cow, dana is charity, and then var is best?
Var is best, like Shrestha Var, the best of the Brahmins. Oh, Shrestha Var, best.
So what does Govardhana mean?
Best giver of charity to the cows.
Oh, okay. That's wonderful. Yeah. The other thing that confused me is that Govardhan is always referred to as the best of devotees of Krishna. Yeah, but Govardhan is Krishna. Now, of course, as far as Balaram, he always considers himself to be a servant of the Lord. As a matter of fact, all the expansions of the Lord, even though they're Krishna himself, consider themselves servant of the Lord. But they're not really so much referred to always like that. You find it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where it clarifies this. But Govardhan is always referred to as a devotee. So that's why it's a little confusing to me. What do you think?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I've heard, you know, that's why I laugh, because this is a real common discussion, because he calls him Haridasa Varya, and at the same time, too, describes then the Krishna took a giant form on top of Govardhan or something, and you know, and said actually that he himself was Govardhan, like that and so on. You know, so I don't know. It's the same thing. You hear different perspectives on it, and maybe he's an incarnation, maybe he's this that, you know, so on. So I suspect I don't know any more about it than you do.
Yeah. I just heard a class on that today from other temples. We're talking about this Govardhan Leela all day. And I think they were reading from Krishna book, and then they were explaining that actually Krishna doesn't want his boyfriends or coward friends to feel kind of inferior. So he stood with them and worshipped the hill, yet he himself also became the hill. So that was the reason they gave, that he actually expanded himself and also worshipped. And in that section, it's mentioned that one should worship the Govardhan Hill like I am doing. So Krishna says that one should worship. Because he was explaining how through Govardhan Hill, they are getting all the nourishment, different forms, different types. And regarding him being the best, because he Govardhan Hill, it was explained this morning at the Denver temple that he turns himself, or he gives water and argya and all the paraphernalia for worshipping. Everything comes from Govardhan. You know, like he explains, as a devotee or as Govardhan offers everything. Yet Krishna stuff becomes
Yeah, that's one of the arguments that Krishna gives. You know, why should we worship Indra? All the stuff we need for our houses, to build our houses, everything else comes from Govardhan.
And today's Srila Prabhupada class was kind of funny in the sense that he was chuckling Prabhupada, and he was saying, first Krishna gives karma mimamsa reason, then he gives Sankhya reason about why we should not worship. First he's expounding atheism. Prabhupada was mentioning all this just so that he could get the people to worship the Govardhan. And in the end, Prabhupada says, we don't have much time, this could be expanded so much more. But quickly he wraps it up in saying, and then he gets them to worship the Govardhan. But laughing, you're saying, he gives all, Krishna gives all these excuses, you know, like, what was it, these different theories to stop them from worshipping Indra.
Krishna is a big cheater.
I like the point that you made about how Brahma, he was so careful, but yet, you know, it was almost like Krishna didn't accept his prayers. Whereas Indra tried to kill everybody, but Krishna said, it's okay. That's amazing. You know, because the offenses were taken differently, because Brahma is on a higher level.
One last point, I actually toss a little bit in here, one more thing. Where is it here? Okay. Shift F5. Yeah, well, it was just real quickly, just briefly, because we're also engaging in Sankirtan here. We have our Sankirtan report here. Here's our Sankirtan team here with a violin, trumpet, and a guitar. We, you know, maybe we're trying to do this whole program with using, what's his name, Carl Jung as a bridge between India and the West, and with good results. And especially we've been in Peru, we've been having good opportunity down there, because it's a very country with a lot more feeling and sentiment than North America. So just yesterday we had a very, very nice meeting finally between Ramon Mujica, who you can find in the Wikipedia there. He's the director of the National Library, which of course is totally integrated with the National Museum. And of course the history of Peru is something unbelievable in terms of, you know, demigods and all this kind of stuff. So he and Nitagar Sundar, Ravi Singh, who's director of our NEOS organization here, my friend for a long time, finally I was able to get them both online, and they had a very, very nice, you know, discussion about the perspective and everything else. And so then now it's confirmed, we're just going to write the formal agreement that we, North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies, along with the National Library of Peru, we'll be sponsoring from June 21st, 22nd, 23rd, a symposium on psychology and the sacred, Psicología el Sagrado, at the National Library. And then we're right away now, because of their prestige, he says that they haven't got a lot of money, but they can guarantee all the infrastructure for management. They can give a beautiful 450-seat auditorium for free. And they have all kinds of advertising media, and he said just because of their name on these international events, they almost always get two or three free international air tickets and hotel accommodations. So it looks like, again, after all this effort, it would be a very, very good opportunity. And if anybody's interested in this area, we're publishing a journal called Solaris of the Sun, which will be all on this topic of psychology of the sacred. And if you know anybody, this is the kind of a level where we can invite biggest people in the world. You know, our co-sponsor is on such a level of prestige that anybody in the world could be invited to participate in this. And of course, we're going to invite atheists to talk about how the sacred is simply a product of psychology. There's nothing more than that. Yeah. But he also wants people from different traditions, very representative people from Islamic and whatever traditions, to talk about psychology. And his point is, like ours, that this is the way that many people can appreciate spirituality and can be their step in a very practical way, you know, to go to it like that. And other projects were going on with the ministry, with Ram Giri Dari in India and so on like that. But I just wanted to mention that, and if anybody has any you know, contacts or interest themselves for writing or participating, that's going on. Okay. So any final questions, comments, complaints?
Maharaj, am I heard here? I don't know.
Hello, hello?
Yeah. Pushkar, we heard this morning in our class that the conundrum of Krishna being the hill and also being Krishna and being, you know, a devotee is that when he appears on the hill, he's Vishnu, and it shows that Vishnu even worships the hill or worships Krishna. So he's actually a Vishnu incarnation, and therefore in that incarnation it shows that Vishnu worships Krishna also.
So is Giriraj a jiva soul, or is he?
No, if he's Krishna, then he's Vishnu. He's not a jiva soul.
Okay,
he worships.
So Giriraj is an expansion of.
They were quoting Jiva Goswami, and I was home listening, but I have to go back and see who they were quoting. Generally, nobody gets away with too much in Alachua. You got to really, you know, quote something. It was, I think, they were quoting Jiva Goswami.
Yeah. But that's it. That's the question. Yeah.
So he is Krishna, but he's Vishnu, but he's also worshiping as. And so Govardhan, whether he's a Jiva, I don't know, but. And there's so many things were mentioned. We're reading from Gopal Champu, how Jiva Goswami was saying that he does the greatest artik and worship of Krishna because the stones are like jewels offered, and all the streams are like Argya and Pudja, and the artik's going on in the form of the breeze of the trees and the flowers, the scent is being offered, and so it's offering all these things. Of course, nowadays we don't notice it that much, but you have to have transcendental eyes. I just saw some pictures of Govardhan. You could barely see it. It was so much smog or something. They just posted a few pictures just yesterday or this morning of Govardhan Parikram.
Yeah.
But it didn't look so, you could barely see. So like that, you have to have transcendental vision. But as far as Jiva Goswami's vision, then we have to use that vision better than ours.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was Hari Parayana who was bringing
Hari Parayana was quote. What was he quoting about? Yeah, Vishnu.
He was saying Advaitacharya.
Advaitacharya.
Because of the Shiva connection with Advaitacharya, Sada Shiva.
Well, I wonder where he got that quote. We got to ask. We'll shake him down. Maybe he got it from.
He's getting the quote because he's sending it over to Janmashtami. He requested it already.
All right, because he's usually translating Sridhar Swami's commentary, and that's before Advaitacharya, but, he might see other things, too.
Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai.
Haribo.
I always kid. My basic relationship is Giriraj is a naughty kid, like that, and so on. I mean, he's the kind of guy. You'll take him home to you, and you'll worship him for 7 years and do so many things for him. And one day he'll say, okay, thank you. I want to go back to Vrindavan now.
How does that work? Do you bring him back?
Yeah.
You've done that, or are you going to do it?
I mean, that's the kind of thing. He's such a... I see him as a personal little kid. He's impulsive, happy, jolly. Like that, and so forth, so on. Yeah. So that's maybe he's it will remain a conundrum. Isn't that actually the real identity of Giri Govardhan? Is he an incarnation of Sankarshan, like that, or is he a jiva soul? Okay. Any case, it's a nice day to worship Giriraj. Of course, Lord Chaitanya told Ramananda, was it Raghunath, bathe him with Ganges water, offer him sandalwood paste and the tulsi leaf, and that was it. And of course, when the Shilas came to Mayapur, and of course, very nice description that Prabhupada did it very simply with water from his karaf, his pitcher, and his own uttariya, own top cloth to dry the Shilas like that. So but very simple, with good character. That's the whole thing. I understand that the Shilas will accept very simple worship, but they're really conscious of the character of the people that are doing it, you know. And so if we have bad character and stuff, then there's going to be a bad reaction like that, even to the point of Giriraj stomping on people in the family and everything else. Well, okay, so thank you very much. Govardhan Puja, Go Puja, Ki Jai. All glory to the Prabhupada.
Thank you, Maharaj. Jai, Govardhan Puja, Ki Jai.
Haribo.
Thank you, Prabhu. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.